So last week we had a chance to sort of put the pieces together, Kovetz al Yad, after having spent several months learning individual components in Hilchos Yichud. Last week we had a chance to bring it all together under one umbrella, to sort of assemble a lot of the elements, that the dimensions of the Isser Yichud, and then we had a chance also to sort of line up and organize eight or nine heterim for the Isser of Yichud. I want to use tonight to speak about, to address some of the hanging threads, different important details that we had not yet discussed or had not maybe sufficiently discussed. The first one is a question of time. We've discussed, you know, with whom I can have yichud, with whom I cannot, and the question of individual identity of particular people, questions of how many people or who else is there, and diffusing the situation, as well as questions of where. As if it's Pesach, Pesach, Rosh Hashanah, certain spaces are public enough or accessible enough that they present the Isser Yichud. Now that you have the dimension of space, you also have the dimension of time. Is there a minimum amount of time? Let's say I am secluded in a situation which is secluded with a person with whom I'm forbidden to be secluded, with a group of people with whom I'm forbidden to be secluded. So is there a stop clock? So a number of contemporary posts from the previous generation that talk about this. Moshe Feinstein in particular, that Tshuva referenced, Chelek Dalet Siman Samachay, which is a list of, like, Simcha Bunim Cohen, who was a Talmud of Moshe Feinstein, seems to have sent him a list of, like, 20-25 shayles. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? I think about this. So Moshe Feinstein says, okay, let me, you made a lot of good points, they're all very relevant to Lacha Maisa. Okay, here we go. Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, as you saw. Here's like a paragraph or two or three at each one. So actually, in more than one segment of that tshuva, both in Os Tes Zayin and in Os Chav Beis, he addresses sort of different elements of this question of the Shir Zman. So the first point that he makes is there is a Shir Zman. It cannot be. He doesn't think it's the case that Yichud is also even momentarily. And he explains why you might have thought that that would be true and why it isn't true. He says, the reason why you would have thought that Yichud be Asr even momentarily is if Yichud is not only about avoiding an actual act of Znos, but even avoiding forbidden contact, a hug, a kiss, that's a matter of seconds. And it's clear as he sort of unpacks what he's talking about, is part of what he's wondering about is elevators. So the elevator closes, and let's say, particularly if it's a high speed express elevator in some sort of tall high rise office building, it's going to go 10-15. I know it's going 10-15 floors. It's going to be, door will be closed for 30 seconds. It's chibuk v'nishuk, isn't it? It's also not Torah for me to have erotic contact, a hug and a kiss with anyone other than my wife or maybe a handful of other close relatives. So look, the doors are closed for 30 seconds. It's just me and her. Yichud. Yichud because of chibuk v'nishuk. So that's where Rosh Hashanah sort of begins by saying, no. There is a Shir Zman because Yichud is built on a concern of actual znus. We had discussed in the past, a couple weeks ago, is it only consensual, or even if it's Rahman al-Islam rape? But clearly he says, Yichud is only, the Isra Yichud is generated by a concern, by a possibility of znus. The possibility of chibuk v'nishuk doesn't generate an Isra Yichud. And his argument is interesting. He says, it's true that for me to have romantic contact with a woman who, not my wife, not another close relative, mother, daughter, etc., is forbidden. And specifically, if she is an erva, if she's married, or if she's a nidin, if she's single, so chibuk v'nishuk b'makom erva is an isur d'oraisa. Rabban Paskin is an isur d'oraisa. He says, oh, so maybe there's an isur yichud. He says, yeah. But there are other Isurim Daraisa also which don't generate in Isser Yichud, and he says that the Gemara of Avodah Zarah that had said the Isser Yichud arises only if it's an erva. If she's a penuya, she's an unmarried woman and not a nida. So then the Gemara says explicitly that it's an Isser Yichud Rabbanan, not an Isser Yichud Arisa. And Rav Moshe says, but the Rambam is very clear that bia outside of marriage is an Isser Daraisa. Even if the woman is not an erva, it's still an Isser Daraisa. Rambam thinks it's both a violation of nasei, a violation of the law. It's clearly an Isser Daraisa, and yet, even though bias penuya is an Isser Daraisa, there's no Isser Yichud min haTorah. So it's clear, Rav Moshe says, that not every Isser Daraisa generates an Isser Yichud. So he says, min haTorah, there's no Isser Yichud and bias penuya either. Chazal decided at a particular time, for particular reasons, the Gemara says, Beis Din Rishol David decided to impose an Isser Yichud on Bias Pnei. Even after that, there still was no Isser Yichud, I would add, on Yichud Nachris, even though that too is an Isser Daraisa. And then they decided a later day, Hillel and Shammai decided to impose an Isser Yichud on that as well. So Moshe Feinstein says, okay, so Chibuk V'Nishuk is with an Erev as an Isser Daraisa, but it doesn't therefore follow. There's an Isser Yichud. So that's sort of step one. Step one is Rav Moshe says, trying to figure out the Shir Zman. The step one is that there does exist a Shir Zman because we're not the fact, the possibility of Chibuk V'Nishuk doesn't generate an Isser Yichud. Yeah.
Why doesn't he use Tinokas as the reason? Because the fact that the Gemara specifically says which Tinokas is Aser or can be counted as like the Shomer is someone who understands. It doesn't say someone who understands hugging or kissing. So the fact that that tinokas is the reason, that tinokas can be a shomer if they understand bia but won't like that aspect.
Okay, that's a good point.
Sounds like that's like
that's a good point.
That saying that's not chibuk and isha.
That's a good point. Like that may be the case. You could have pushed back a little bit, but yeah, that's a good point. That's another raya. I would add, before we move on to the next step of his analysis, it is important to note, in Mesillas Yesharim, deep into the Sefer, Ramchal has this idea. He says, look, Chazal made gzeros on the cases that affect broad numbers of people. And other factors. Chazal had a couple of factors. Frequency, incidence, risk, and there are a slew of issues that Chazal took into account when they decided whether or not to make a gzera. So Ramchal says, but every individual may need to fill in for himself. If I know that I have a weak spot, so then I should be making my own gzera. So that's an important point. If a person really is worried that he may fall into chibuk v'yishuk, okay, so then don't have even momentary yichud. But it's not something that Chazal imposed. Chazal did not, neither min haTorah nor midrabbanan is there an iser of momentary yichud. So then the question becomes, okay, so if there is a length of time, it is a shir zman, so what is that shir zman? So often you would take a look at that sugya in the beginning of the first paragraph of Sota, and again, here we come back to the overlap and the distinction between yichud and Sota. Again, the Parsha in Nusso tells us that implies that if there's direct evidence of Eishes Ishes Zintsev, an act of adultery, so then the adulterous couple cannot marry each other, nor can the adulteress stay with her present husband. If I don't have direct evidence that there was an act of Nus, but there could still be enough likelihood that we consider a suffix. And that, the Mishnah is there said, the first opening Mishnah in Sota, based on the Psukim in Parshas Naso, it's a combination of two factors, Kinoi and Stira. It was a Stira, this woman was alone with another man, following a witness conversation between her and her husband, in which the husband said, I think something's going on between you and Ploni, Altistri and Ishploni. That after that kinoi, after that witness conversation, she subsequently is alone with Ploni. So then, A plus B, the two factors, the key in this year together, don't tell me that definitely he's no sucker. They do require enough of raglayim ledavar, enough likelihood. There's a real suffix whether or not that yichud, that stira, led to an actual act of nos, and therefore, misafik she's a sota, misafik she's treated as a ishishishazinsa, unless I could use the me sota in the Beis HaMikdash to resolve, to test and resolve the suffix. Now, so in that context, the beginning of the Msefa Sota, so the Gemara wants to know, well, we need to define stira. So how long is... There's evidence that this woman was alone with Ploni for how long? So the Gemara has a remarkably long conversation about that, well over an Amud, going back and forth, many different Tanaim had their ways of describing the Shir's man for stira. Time it takes to fry an egg, to do this, the time it takes to do this, the time it takes to do that. And all of those, the Gemara points out, are assessments of the minimum length of time for a ma'aseh bi'ur. Short, couple minutes. And that's the shir stira. So a woman had a kinoy conversation with her husband, and then subsequently, of whatever it is, machos tanam, one or two aiden witnessed her alone with Ploni for this very brief period of time. Machok tanam, exactly how long it is. So then she's a sur labaila. She has status of a sota. So often you say, look, okay, there you go. That minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever the different shittos there are, that's the shir zman for yichud. Then Rav Moshe Feinstein says, no. He says it's not applicable. There's a difference between yichud and stira. And the most straightforward difference is that of the context. Now, stira is in a context where we're worried that there's already some sort of adulterous romance going on. And that's where the evidence is pointing. And within that context, she spent a few minutes alone with this fellow. Okay, so then they may have been primed to take the opportunity of 2-3 minutes to commit an act of adultery. Moshe Feinstein says, but a normal situation of yichud, typically you don't know the person at all. Okay, that's a part, seems like part of the question of, well, you're in this elevator for 2 minutes, you know, you're getting to this high-speed elevator, you're going to be all the two of you alone, if it's not going to open up for the next 2 minutes, whatever it is, a minute and a half, you know, so maybe that's yichud. He says, nah, this is not stira. Stira for a sota, that's in the context of where the husband is worried that his wife has been flirting with this guy, if not actively practicing adultery. Certainly there's been a romance has been building. But two random people, you know each other a little bit, even more than a little bit. Moshe says, it's going to be way more than a minute or two. He says, number one, there's a question of getting undressed and getting dressed afterwards. And more than that, there's a question of the conversation. This is going to be a process. It's not just going to be an act of znos in a vacuum. He says, no, it's much longer. You have to figure, Rosh finds is you have to figure out what would the minimum amount, it's going to be a little hard to assess, what the minimum amount of time for an inappropriate conversation, a proposition, and then actually going through a process of undressing in Tashmish, and then getting dressed again. That's not 2 minutes. And he says, like, he seems to imply, look, if people know each other well, so maybe the amount of time is somewhat shorter. You have to assess. But we're talking about 10, 15, 20 minutes or more. Talking about a chunk of time. So you have to figure out exactly what that time is. But the time is, that's Rav Moshe, where he writes both in Os Tezayin and Os Chavbeis, there is a Shir Zman, it's not Bachiv Benishuk, and it's significantly longer than the Gemara and Sota. And that's one issue. One issue is the shir's mom.
Even though he says you have to be worried about ones, as a possible with like a woman with a non-Jewish man, if that could happen easily in 10 minutes, like why? So when we did the when we did the onus, Rav Moshe said you have to worry about onus.
Right.
So why wouldn't, like, if that situation, why wouldn't you be worried about onus? Which then, it doesn't require a seduction.
And that's a good point. If you take that approach, that the sugya in the second parak of Avodah Zarah, of Yichud with a Nachri, is based on Onas, which is the indication of the sugya, Nechrami, it's a good point. So then you would reduce the time somewhat, right? You would reduce the time somewhat. That's a good point. This also perhaps feeds into the next issue. Rav Moshe has a discussion, other posts have a discussion. One of the cases that you had mentioned was a question of a doctor's office or a medical context or a psychotherapeutic context. So Rav Moshe brings in the question, he discusses, this is actually the first topic in Siman Samech Hei, Os Aleph. He says there are many very religious women who have male doctors. So you're in the patients in the exam room alone with the doctor. So why is that mutter? He says he knows of the many, many religious women who go to see the doctor. They don't necessarily bring their husband along. So what would you do with Yichud? So Rav Moshe Ray starts sort of looking at it from perspective of how long are you in. He's focused somewhat, a fair amount, on the question of time. I think other posts can think more broadly, although along similar lines to a lot of the ideas that Rav Moshe Feinstein raises, that generally the way you diffuse this or Yichud in a medical context, and it's something that nowadays in particular physicians are also concerned about, is usually you have other staff in the office who can come in and out. Now, you're not going to have other random people, obviously. You're going to protect the patient's privacy. But there'll be nurses, there'll be other staff in the office, in the hospital, in the clinic, whatever it is, who will knock and walk in. I'll give you 5 seconds to knock, but there's way less than a shir yichud. So if there's someone who, if there are other people in the office who can and do knock and let themselves in, so that solves the problem of yichud. And that's probably that's La Mahadran. That is La Mahadran. If Moshe starts saying also, even if the staff isn't coming in, but they're going to notice if this exam went unusually long. Why did that exam go? They know how long they're in the office all the time. They know what the doctor's rhythm is. All of a sudden, this exam was 15 minutes longer than any other. They would notice. Or other patients. He talks to other patients are waiting. So I think the way our doctor's office usually work, there's several layers of barriers between the patient, and you have no idea what's going on. Why once I came and I waited for 5 minutes, different time I came and waited for 45 minutes, who knows? Is it because the doctor was on lunch break? Is it because he got called into emergency? Is it because there was a phone call? I don't know. Or is it because he was with the previous patient for an extra 20 minutes? Rav Moshe's svar about the patient's waiting, maybe doctor's offices used to be organized differently than they are now, but certainly in terms of the staff noticing that something's awry, and even better, if the staff can let themselves in, and on occasion do, so that's pas pasuch. It's definitely pas pasuch. There is a tshuva of Tzitz Eliezer, which some are more excited about and some are less excited about. He thinks the fact that if the doctor engaged in an inappropriate relationship with the patient, he would lose his license, his career is over. So Waldenberg and Sisleyazer thinks that alone is enough to eliminate Isra Yichud. We'll come to soon. The summary shown him discussed, would you say, by Vidite Tarin? The Rambam thinks that there's a Mishnah that indicates just the fact that you're at work, that you're in a professional context, that alone does not eliminate the Isra Yichud. The Dvar Halacha points out, I think it's the Chumash Rav Vaz, who thinks maybe sometimes you would say, the fact that it's a business context, you're in a professional mode, and therefore there's no Isra Yichud, that's not widely accepted. We do not usually assume, and unfortunately, in Enu Haros, that the people are inappropriate in a business context also. Tzitzel Yezer sounds like he's saying, but this is more. This is more than just about Viditate. It's not just that you're in a professional context. Your entire career, this fellow invested 7, 10, 15 years of education into his medical career, and then he's going to throw it all away in a minute because, you know, he'll besmirch his reputation. So, on the one hand, there are news reports periodically about doctors who do make that horrific decision. Le'idach Gisa, okay, maybe it's seeing the news from time to time, but thinking statistically, it may be a very rare phenomenon. I don't know what the stats are. So the Sicily Ezra has that idea that maybe whenever it's in a medical context, the fear of being outed and losing one's entire career is enough to eliminate Isra Yichud. I think many poskim are not incredibly comfortable with relying on that alone. But certainly, if the staff that's coming in now, the staff at the very least that's monitoring will notice if one consult, one examination was unusually long, that definitely solves your problem. Yeah.
Separately, isn't that the
hector
for Chol Yisrael? Because the partner might be afraid that the government's
going to
catch
you. That's an interesting point, right? That other tshuva of Moshe finds, which maybe we'll get to at some point. Come back to Simukhov Tazvav. Yeah, that is true. That is true. I think you raise an interesting point. The question is, I guess, in different areas of halacha, there may be different standards that you require of keeping people on their toes. You're right. Much of kashrus, Chol Yisrael, and much of kashrus is built even on derises. A question of yotzei v'nichnas, a question of mirtas. That's what I hear is mirtas. And not that someone's actually coming in, but I would be scared. I would be very apprehensive about engaging in behavior X. But the behavior X is an act. There's no such behavior X is adulterating, you know, the food product, because I get caught, my reputation, and so forth. Right? It's interesting to think about. Different areas of halacha may have different bars you have to cross in terms of how much excuse me. How much disincentive do you have to have? It's an interesting point. You have to think about how a post can do sometimes. I think we had it by Pesach Pasuach. It came a little bit. Some post can point it to Sugya of Avodah Zarah in the context of halachas of Yayin. Someone may peek in, someone might be passing by. Some of the post can, by Pesach Pasuach, bring in the halachas of Yain. That's interesting to think about. In a therapeutic context, it's said there sometimes it's more complex. You're dealing with a psychologist is seeing a patient individually. So if a male psychologist is seeing a female patient, or a female psychologist seeing a male patient, so from a professional standpoint. Thank you so much. Thank you. So in a context of psychotherapy, someone professionally, sometimes it's more indicated to have a therapist of the same gender as the patient, and sometimes it may be helpful to have opposite gender. Sometimes just a question of, you know, who's most competent or who has the greatest competency in this particular field, this particular issue. So there too, if it's in a clinic or if it's in a hospital, you have a lot of staff, or even if it's a solo psychologist with staff in his or her office, you have a secretary, receptionist, something like that. If you have other staff that can walk in and out, so that's ideal. If not, you're going to have to find some other solution. You know, unless you go to Waldenberg, you assume because it's there's a professional reputation that's totally on the line, if you're not going to accept Tzitzeliezer's approach, then you're going to have to find some other solutions. That's you go back to our three columns of nine heterim. Okay, so what else can I do? The most other than other staff who can come in. Another solution sometimes, I think we discussed this when we discussed Pes Pasuach, is if you have a window, if you can design an office, I know of more than one mental health professional, at least one male mental health professional, one female mental health professional, who each designed their workspaces so that you don't have to, the client doesn't have to be visible to passersby as long as the therapist is. The client can have his or her privacy, but the professional is situated so that people passing by in the hall, if it's a suite within a building, I know one psychologist who has a home office. If the front room, the first floor is his office, and it's arranged, it's specifically the front room, and it arranged the room so that he has an open window, so that anyone passing by the street can see him, but can't see his clients. His clients have privacy, male or female, and he is visible. So that that solves your yichud problems. And that brings us also to the third issue. We spoke about the shirzman, spoke a little about some of the issues that come up, doctor or psychologist. It should be noted, by the way, before we leave the question of doctor or psychologist, there are other heterim that could be in play also. For instance, Baal Be'ir. Again, if it's a female professional, a female physician or a female psychologist, so she's always the one who has the shayla. So if her husband, she works in the same town as her husband, Baal Be'ir. Again, we said we follow the Rambam, the Chazon Ish, and the Chidah. So even though it's not she's not at home, her husband's not showing up to the office, doesn't matter. Baal Be'ir, a solution. Or if you have a client coming, a female client coming to a male psychologist, or a female patient coming to a male doctor. So if she knows her husband's in town, Baal Be'ir solves the problem. Unless it's Libo Gospel, which is unlikely to be the case. Again, in a psychological context, over time, if it's an extended course of therapy, over time there will be more. There'll have been a lot of conversation, a lot of sharing over time. But if it's a healthy, appropriate professional relationship, it should not be the fact that the client is sharing a lot of very personal material with his therapist should not be creating a personal Libo Gospel relationship between therapist and client. If it does, that's an unhealthy situation anyhow. So Baal Be'ir could be a solution, Pesel Pasuach could be a solution, Baal Be'ir either in terms of the patient, the client, or in terms of the professional, or you have staff who serve as shomrim, or an echanami, or else a female patient will bring her husband along. Okay, you'll figure out how to bring someone along. Or the following isn't always practical, but you can... You can FaceTime or have a WhatsApp video call with someone else, and you bring someone else in, so to speak, and someone else can see your face, okay, and a video call with someone that resolves any yichud problems. Now, again, to figure out if that's practical or not, may not be practical in a psychological context. You leave the phone on. Let's say a woman goes, her husband's or a friend, and you have to be on the whole time. The person knows. This is open, and you have an open video call, and the other person may periodically pop in and peek. So that's, if you can organize that, it's going to be a little more difficult for the psychologist to organize that, to figure out how that could work in a way that the client's still comfortable. The client can do it. So we spoke about the shirzman, we spoke about some of the issues, applying some of what we've dealt with to a medical or psychological context. A third issue... the third issue is a question of Gimel Nashim. the Rama, what is a footnote? I think we had discussed this already. The Mishnah, the second Mishnah on Pebez Amar Aleph, had that mysterious line, Kol Sha'asakim Hanashim Lo Yisachedim Hanashim, which most Rishonim, certainly the Ashkenaz Rishonim, understood to mean there were more Machmer and Yichud for a man whose line of work is with women. So an important footnote, I spoke to Rabbi Neuberger about this today, he assumes the halacha that we do accept Shitas Rashi. Rashi assumes that what the Mishnah is saying, the previous Mishnah said, a man cannot be alone with two women. This Mishnah says, if he's a Sakra Nashim, he cannot be alone with women, no number specified. So Rashi understands, it means normally, if you're not a Sakra Nashim, so then it's forbidden for a man to be alone with two women, but three or more is mutter. Other Rishonim disagree. Tosis disagrees, the Rambam disagrees entirely. The Ramah had quoted in Sefei this idea of the Ramah as a Yesh Omer. Yesh Matir Mishachar Nashim Harbe, in the Ein Asakam Nashim. So Rosh Feinstein is not excited about that. He writes in the Tshuva in the later segment, he thinks that Mikra didn't really pass in that way. He mentioned it later as a sniff. It doesn't sound like he's willing to rely on that alone. And Neuberger told me he thought we do. He says Ramah quotes it. And he said Rafelder quotes it lahalacha. So he assumed that Ish Echad and Shalosh Nashim is Mutter. By Laila you require four. Just like by Laila you require three men instead of the two men, three men with one woman. So if it's the reverse, one man is Mutter to be alone with three men, three women by Yom. And by Laila is a four. It's four. So that's important to keep in mind. Lehalacha. They also may come up sometimes in some of these medical contexts. If you need to run tomorrow, by all means. If you want to stick around, I know we've been the sugya of Androgynous. We've been waiting for us. Let's talk about it at least a bit. And then I think we'll round out our discussion with Chos Yichud and we'll add an additional dimension to these dinim. It's Androgynous comes up in the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch. The Gemara does not address directly Androgynous, Yichud of Androgynous, but the Rambam does Halacha Yud Aleph, and that's quoted by the Torah Shulchan Aruch and Se'if Yud Beis. Rambam says, the Shulchan Aruch says, Androgynous cannot have Yichud with women, but Androgynous can have Yichud with a man. Androgynous, again, is there are two people of unusual gender that the Rambam discusses here, that Chazal discusses in a number of places, and that's Androgynous and Tumtum. Androgynous is someone who, an individual who has both male and female genitalia. He is, seems to be a man and seems to be a woman. A Tumtum is someone who is sort of the reverse. There are no visible genitalia at all. And it's probably covered by tissues. We're not exactly sure what his, we don't know what his status is unless he do a surgery. So here the Shulchan Aruch, Sif Yud Beis, quotes in the Rambam and Halachi Aleph that Androgynous ain't Misachim Anashim, but he wouldn't get Malkus, Safik, but Ish Misachim Androgynous Ve'im Atumtum. Androgynous can have Yichud with a woman. But a man can have yichud with an androgynous and with a tumtum. So that's the position of the Rambam, the Tur, the Shulchan Aruch. The androgynous and a woman is a prohibition of yichud. Androgynous and a man is not a prohibition of yichud. There are two major kashas on that. To summarize, there's actually a lot of discussion in Osakalim here, more than in most areas of halacha. Androgynous comes up in a number of areas of halacha. There's actually more discussion about androgynous in Yichud than in most other areas. There are two major problems. One is based on what we call Migemara, and one is Misvara. One is from sources, and the other one is a logical problem. The problem from sources is that the Gemara in Kiddushin doesn't, and the Yichud Sugis doesn't discuss the Yichud. But the Tanaim do discuss a lot of the dinim of Androgynous, if you look at a Mishnayis, there are three prakim of Mishnayis Bikurim, but in the Mishnayis, it's usually of a fourth parak, something published as a fourth parak. It's not only Mishnayis, it's brises that were appended. The fourth parak of Bikurim is parak Androgynous. It takes you through, very organized, five Mishnayis or five brises. First one says, Androgynous, very complicated. There are ways in which he deemed their shares with the man, deemed shares with the woman, deemed shares with both, and deemed their shares with neither. And then, halachas beis gimel dal and hey, go on to detail each of those. So one issue, there are two issues. So one issue is that what the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch say does not align to what the Tanam write, both in that Perek Androgynous, which is published as the Perek Dalet of Mishnayis Bikurim, and in the Tosefta on Bikurim, Perek Beis of the Tosefta is dedicated to Dinim of Androgynous. So what you see there is not what you see here. And the Gra writes about this somewhat extensively. The Gra to Sif Yud Beis, your Sif Kut and your Tess. He says, if you look in the Tosefta, it says that Androgynous is forbidden with both. Ain Androgynous Mesiachid Lom Ha'anashim, Elom Ha'anashim. So the Rambam, the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch, they're all against the Tanam. The Tanam don't say that. That's the big kasha number one. Is mi gemara? It's against the sources. Big kasha number two, is logically, why should this be true? Why would you say that he's androgynous? Cannot have yichud with a woman, but can't have yichud with a man. If the whole concept is that we're treating androgynous either sort of a blend of both male and female, or because physically he actually is, and genetically this individual is, or we're treating the androgynous as a suffix zachar, suffix nekev. But either way, should be symmetrical. So why is it that? The androgynous may not have yichud with a woman, but may have yichud with a man. So we don't understand misvara. It's against the sources, against the Tanam, and you don't understand misvara. The Gra deals with it extensively. The Rav Yosef Karo, although in the Shulchan Aruch, he just quotes around on the tour, Rav Yosef Karo already wrote in pre-written Perushim on both. He wrote the Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam and the Beis Yosef on the Tur. See, he raises these issues. He takes somewhat different approaches in the two different Sfarim. So there are a total of three approaches, I think, to the question of sources. And then even more significantly, there are a couple of ways of thinking about the question of Svara. In terms of sources, so in Kesef Mishnah, when the Rav Yosef Karo is writing the Rambam, he says, oh, maybe it's Machlokes HaSugyos. Because after all, the Gemara on Pei Beis has a discussion amongst the Tanaim, would we create an Isser Yichud because of a concern of homosexual behavior? Nechshadu Yisrael Mishkav Zahalo Nechshadu. So maybe the Tosefta is saying that Androgynous cannot have Yichud with a man or a woman because the Tosefta is assuming, like Rabbi Yehuda, the Nechshadu al Mishkav Zahar. So the Gemara says that doesn't work at all. Number one, Tosefta never said that no one thinks that there's a full Isser Yichud between men, even if you say Nechshadu Yisrael al Mishkav Zahar. Number two, the Tanam were clear that it's because he's Shavu L'Nashim U'L'Nashim. He can't. A girl can't have yichud with a man the same way a woman can't have yichud with a man. So the whole thing doesn't work. Plus, if you look in the Magid Mishnah, the Magid Mishnah quotes the Tosefta, not as a kasha on the Rambam, as a source for the Rambam. So that may be part of what leads to Beis Yosef, the same Yosef Karo in the Beis Yosef in the tour. He says, well, Teretz number two, maybe the Rama had different gears than Tosefta. Not the same. Our gears in Tosefta is against the Rama. He must have different gears than Tosefta, which is certainly a possibility. We don't, as far as I know, we don't actually have sources for that, evidence beyond his speculation. The Gra thinks not a different gears than the Tosefta, a different gears than the Rambam. He points out a lot of problems with the Rambam. He says, look, you see the Rambam, he starts, Shulchan Aruch starts to talk just about androgynous, but ends by talking about tumtum also. A lot of sort of like discontinuities in the language of the Rambam Shulchan Aruch. So the Beir Agra thinks that really it's a mistake in the gears of the Rambam. Maybe the Rambam really was saying that he's forbidden to have, the androgynous cannot have yichud neither with men nor with women. Okay. Problem is that too. Yeah, if you look in the Frankel, I don't think there's any kisvei yet, any manuscripts or old prints of the Rambam that support that. So it's certainly a possibility. So I think the jury is still out, I would say, in terms of how you fit the Rambam with the Tosefta. We could sort of say lehalacha, there is an iser yichud between an androgynous and a woman, l'chol hadeos. Between an androgynous and a man, the halacha is a machlokas between the Shulchan Aruch and the Gra. Shulchan Aruch and the Tur follows the Tur and argues in the Rambam that there is no iser yichud between an androgynous and a man, whereas the Gra disagrees. He says, I have a Tosefta to indicate it, and he says logically. And that brings us to question number two, with this we close, which is the logical question. Whatever you can do with the sources, but why? Why would you say that there's no Isir Yichud with between an androgynous and a man? If androgynous is a suffix, Zachar, Suffix, Nekeva, or sort of equal parts of both Zachar and Nekeva, so why is all of a sudden this asymmetry? Yeah. So the Beis Shmuel l'chalak is machokas. I think there are three basic approaches. And I would suggest that these three basic approaches, in addition to addressing the specific question of androgynous, which is a rare and very, very sad situation, hermaphrodites do exist. It's relatively rare. I think the medical literature indicates further that within the class of hermaphrodites, most are predominantly male, predominantly female. It's my understanding. It's usually it's addressed surgically in the delivery room because usually from a physical standpoint, overwhelmingly one or the other. That's my impression that the true hermaphrodites, where it's really even divide between male and female, is very, very rare. Obviously, very. Very, very sad situation. Very, very complex and fraught. No doubt. And the yichud just, the tip of the iceberg. So there seem to be three major approaches to understanding misvara, this approach, Shita of Shulchan Aruch and Argirs and the Tur and the Rambam, that the halachas of yichud are asymmetrical. And I would suggest that not only does it address the rare and sad situation of androgynous, it speaks maybe to other situations of gender ambiguity also. So at least lays out some of the concepts that Gedolei Poskim have to think about when considering Yichud in the context of gender ambiguity and issues of gender ambiguity in general. The first major approach, the Beis Shmuel, the Chelkas Mechokek on the Sarah Shulchan Aruch, as well as the Chastei David, with one of the Perushim print on the bottom of the Tosefta, take the approach that, in theory, it should be symmetrical, but men have no desire for androgynous. So that's why it's not going to be an Isser Yichud. There are different versions of exactly how you say it. The Beis Shmuel said, the Prisha say, well, a man isn't really sure, is androgynous really female? Or it's a Chalkas Mechokas, along those lines, it's profoundly unappealing. So there's no concern, practically speaking, there's no concern of it's true that if the man and androgynous were to have an act of tashmish, that would be a problem. But the vanishingly, negligibly small concern. The Chasdei Dov in the bottom of the Tosefta, see, he a little bit of a twist. He says it's not just that, practically speaking, a man in androgynous, a man is uninterested in the androgynous. It's more than that. It's that there's a din in that long list of dinim of in that Tosefta has, dinim that androgynous shares with the man, shares with the woman, so on and so forth. One of the dinim that he shares with the man is that he is mislabesh kazachar. You have a din of begadisha, begadish. The halacha psukim mechumish mandate that a man has to wear male clothing, a woman has to wear female clothing. So many of the cases, the halachos, here's halacha that are discussed, the concept of androgynous, you can be machmer in both directions. You can be machmer that he has dinim of balkari and dinim of nida. Okay. But here, how is he going to dress? You can't be machmer in both directions. You have to pick. So the Tosefta says he's mislabish kazachar. He's going to wear male clothing, not female clothing. Now, that also may speak to a larger issue, which is that the din of Begadish and Begadisha is one of the contexts in which halacha speaks about gender identity, as the Torah is saying, that I'm mechuyev to line up gender identity, how I dress and how I groom, how I represent myself, has to line up to biological sex. That's what the pasuk says. So the halacha is koveya, Tosefta says, the androgynous, he's physically a blend, but his gender identity, api halacha, is male. Mislabish kazar, he's supposed to dress and groom like a man. So the Chassid David says, oh, so then that's why he has the issue yichud with women, but not with men. Chassid David takes it sort of technically. Man will not be interested in this androgynous who comports himself like a male. The Mishnah Achrona is one of the marvelous Mefarshim of Mishnayos you'll find in the Yachanu Boaz. He wrote the Mishnah Rishona on Zra and the Mishnah Achrona on Seder Taharas. So Zavin, beginning of the second paragraph of Zavin, is where the Mishnayos, already pre-Tosefta, the Mishnayos themselves address the notion that in general, the androgynous has to be machmer in both directions. You treat the androgynous as chayiv in mitzvahs from age 12, but chayiv in mitzvahs shazvan grum only from age 13, and so on and so forth. The Mishnah Achron has a long discussion there about the dinim of androgynous, and he says it rather pointing to the fact that in terms of dress, the halacha mandates he dressed like a male. He points a different din. No seva eino nisa. He's supposed to marry, a drug is supposed to marry a woman. He's not supposed to marry a man. An even stronger expression of this issue. So he has a whole cheshbon, how that plays out into the world of yichud, but it seems to speak to a similar way of thinking. He gets a little more technical. Also, he says, to the extent that he's partially female, that's always penuya. He works with it. And then finally, there's the approach of the Bach, as well as the Haggos, Tosis Yontif, both on the tour. So they say, maybe you see from here that the androgynous is primarily male. That's why he's mislabish kazachar. That's why no se vein onisa. And sort of like we're machmir ki'ilu, he has to treat himself as though he's also a female, but predominantly his male. So these are all different ways of thinking about specifically the din, the shita, advanced in the Shulchan Aruch, based on Argius and the Rambam and the Torah, that androgynous has an isur yichud with women, but not with men. Either it speaks to the practical considerations of attraction, or it speaks to halachic definitions of gender. In addition, as I said, in addition to specific situation of androgynous, who is an individual with a very challenging beyond words situation, a very fraught situation. So it's Gedolei HaPoskim have to think about Yichud and other areas of Halach in the context of other types of gender ambiguity. Both people who, individuals who grapple with same-sex attraction and individuals who grapple with gender dysphoria. They feel like I'm a woman in a man's body, or I feel like I'm a man in a woman's body. So it's obviously all these situations are emotionally fraught and complex beyond words. And any such situation obviously need for a tremendous amount of guidance and support, including halachic guidance for people of extraordinary measure in terms of learning and in terms of sensitivity. The question of yichud, there'll be a host of things that have to be thought about, but one of which is yichud. And it's sort of a dual question. It's a question of a typical individual is alone. Can I or can I not be alone with someone who grapples with same-sex attraction, with someone who grapples with gender dysphoria? There's one child, the one way the child could be presented is from the point of view of an outsider. The other way a child could be presented is a person who says, I'm a Shomer Torah Mitzvos, I'm a Yirei Shamayim, I'm seeking to do the right thing, and I grapple with same-sex attraction. I grapple with gender dysphoria. So what is how? So how am I supposed to act? The she'ela chamura, certainly beyond the scope of these shiurim, but I would say that the halacha has what to say about every situation, and some of the concepts that Gedolei HaPoskim will grapple with, I think, emerge from the discussion of androgynous. Both, in other words, one issue that the first approach, the Beis Shmuel, the Chalkes Mechokeg, the Chasei David, is when you think about Yichud, you have to think about the practicalities of attraction. There's no attraction, so that can change the calculus in terms of Yichud. And practically, there is attraction. Maybe that also changes the calculus in terms of Yichud. And then there's the issue that the Chasei Dav and the Mishnah Achrona raises. The Mislabish Kazacha, the Nosevein and Nisa, the fact that the Halacha has nuanced things to say about gender identity, even in complex situations. And we need to process what would the Halacha say about these situations, and how will that play out in terms of what will be ramifications in terms of halachas of yichud? So this is sort of like a whole other dimension. We began the shir with one, an added dimension of the dinam of yichud, the shir's mom. And then we briefly discussed some of the questions in professional context and the question of the shita of Rashi, quoted by the Ramav, Gimel Lashon. And then we ended with a whole other dimension of this yichud, is that the sugya of androgynous is a sugi in its own right, and it also sort of begins to raise some of the larger issues that Gedolei HaPoskim need to deal with and need to grapple with.